New federal rules on Title IX went into effect this month that will fundamentally change the way colleges and universities handle cases of sexual misconduct. But what exactly do those changes mean? Nevada Independent reporter Jacob Solis has the story.
To really understand how we got here, we have to take a trip back to 2017. Donald Trump had just been inaugurated and Betsy DeVos ushered in as the newest Secretary of Education. A high-profile school choice advocate and a longtime Republican donor, DeVos had some radical changes in mind for the nation's education systems. Those changes included taking a fresh look at Title IX. That's the federal law which governs sex-based discrimination on college campuses and which provides a framework for colleges to investigate sexual misconduct, including harassment and assault.
Through intimidation and coercion, the failed system has clearly pushed schools to overreach. With the heavy hand of Washington tipping the balance of her scale, the sad reality is that Lady Justice is not blind on campuses today.
That's DeVos speaking at George Mason University in 2017, giving an opening salvo to what would become a years-long quest to fundamentally change the due process rules laid out by Title IX. Amid widely publicized missteps at some of America's biggest and most prestigious universities, DeVos and other critics of Obama-era Title IX regulations said it was too easy for a false accusation to slip through the cracks, criticizing low evidence standards, inconsistent application of the rules, and a widespread lack of due process. The Education Department under DeVos spearheaded what would become a years-long process of combing through Title IX and, in DeVos's own words, reframing what it does in cases of sexual harassment.
The truth is that the system established by the prior administration has failed too many students. Survivors, victims of a lack of due process, and campus administrators have all told me that the current approach does a disservice to everyone involved.
Though it faced fierce criticism early on, and that process finally quietly ended this May when the Education Department released more than 2,000 pages of legal guidance. But that guidance was released in the midst of a global pandemic that at the time had shuttered colleges and spurred tens of millions in higher ed budget cuts in Nevada alone, and it was chock full of major changes. For one, the new rules increased the burden of proof required in cases of a hostile environment. The old rules needed you to prove conduct was one of three things: severe, persistent, or pervasive. Now, conduct must be all three: severe, persistent, and pervasive. They also implement new jurisdictional requirements which limit investigations to U.S. soil, so no study abroad investigations, and they limit any investigation to property owned or controlled by the university, meaning no off-campus investigations. And in maybe the most controversial change of them all,
it would require not only an investigation, but also a mandatory hearing with a live hearing with live cross-examination in real time. And so that's a huge difference that was not common on a lot of college campuses, definitely not on ours.
That's Maria Ducey-Paris. She's the Title IX coordinator at the University of Nevada, Reno. And she was one of the people in Nevada's higher ed system who spent months poring over the new rules and interpreting how they changed the state's existing Title IX regulations. But all this brings us back to last week, August 7th. After 3 months of tweaking Nevada's higher ed regulations to match the new federal standard, the Board of Regents, which governs higher education, had just a week before federal deadlines to put these new rules in place or risk jeopardizing roughly $420 million in federal funding. When Regents finally arrived at the Title IX agenda item, it wasn't long before the debate grew heated.
Bad laws are meant to be broken. As policymakers, we have the power to halt this terrible and harmful law. I caution those who vote yes on this, as you will be standing on the side of rapists, violent criminals, and assaulters. I'm voting on behalf of survivors and all victims of sexual violence today. I'm a strong no.
That's the voice of Regent Lisa Levine. Though several regents chimed in to express disappointment or criticism of the new rules, and many pushed back on her assertion that voting yes was standing on the side of rapists, none spoke on the issue like Levine, whose comments largely echoed what other critics have been saying for years. Their argument, in essence, changing the rules to look like a criminal court will only serve to drive down the reporting of such offenses, even while what data we do have show that these offenses are already underreported. Here's how Levine later characterized that chilling effect in an interview with me a few days after that meeting.
1 in 5 women in college experience some kind of sexual assault. 1 in 16 men even experience some kind of sexual assault while in college. And so we want to try to decrease that so students don't have that emotional and physical impact on them that can be very severe for the rest of their lives.
But the story of that Regents meeting doesn't end with a policy debate. Levine and others raised questions about the timing of the rule changes and questioned why the system's lawyer or Attorney General Aaron Ford hadn't sought to join one of 4 lawsuits looking to stop the federal change. Those questions even prompted Ford to call into the meeting himself, triggering a brief disagreement over parliamentary procedure, and finally, this exchange between Levine and Board of Regents Chief of Staff Dean Gould.
And I was also just reminded that the federal funds,
Regent Levine, I'm going to ask you to please mute yourself. You're out of order.
The federal funds don't even get removed.
I don't want a man speak, but I will have to if you continue to child speak. So please stop.
A tweet containing a video of the remark spread like wildfire on social media, with nearly every top Democratic politician, from Governor Steve Sisolak to Representative Susie Lee to even the state's treasurer, Zach Conine, all denouncing Gould's comment. But Gould later doubled down, saying in his statement that his remark was a reference to a meeting in July in which Levine had accused him of mansplaining open meeting rules to her. As of Sunday, Regents Chair Mark Dubrava told the board in a letter that the matter was still under investigation, but he also criticized a lack of appropriate language and proper decorum at recent meetings. The board ultimately voted to adopt the new guidelines 10-3, but amid all this, there's still a number of questions over exactly what happens next. At the institutional level, preparations for the implementation of these rules are still moving forward. Ducey Paris, the Title IX coordinator at UNR, says the new changes, though they are major, aren't the end-all be-all of adjudicating sexual misconduct on campus. A crucial caveat to all this, she says, is that there's still a secondary process that victims could still opt into. She couldn't say whether or not the changes will have a chilling effect, but she says the problem now is largely making sure that students know about all their options in the first place.
I think initially it's going to be confusing. I mean, I think that's just the honest answer because, you know, everyone's heard. It's all in the news. Title IX's changed. And so everybody's up in arms, and that's what has people's attention. And I think even at that meeting, at the Board of Regents meeting, I think it was missed by many that, hey, that's not the end of the story. but unfortunately, that's the end of the story for a lot of people because that's all that they know because that's what's publicized.